every call. I don't care if it's a fire alarm, a structure fire, a high rise, an industrial, it does not matter. As soon as the tones drop off, it's my house, it's my family. I think that every single call that I go on, we went on a dumpster fire this morning. That was my dumpster. I felt like that's my business. That was my dumpster on fire. So we're going to take care of it as it was our own. And that's our job.
Firehouse Vigilance presents the Weekly Scrap, a podcast dedicated to the never-ending fight against complacency.
Corley Moore, Firehouse Vigilance. It is Weekly Scrap number 233. My guest tonight is John Eric Johnson. He has served on the Longview Fire Department for the last 17 years, where he currently holds the rank of battalion chief. He has served as an incident commander in multiple complex emergency incidents, both in fire and technical rescue responses. Chief Johnson has all the certs. He has the degrees. He is a faithful man, dedicated father, and married for 19 years to his beautiful wife. In addition, he is the vice president of Emergency Training Services Incorporated. Lastly, Chief Johnson remains a forever student of the job and is grateful for the mentors that give pleasure to have you on as the guest of Weekly Scrap number 233. Welcome, my brother, John.
Thank you so much, Chief. I'm so excited to be here.
Going to be a good time. We are live. Instagram, YouTube, LinkedIn, Facebook. Get your questions ready. Sam is out there. He is curating all of them. I'm looking at Instagram. Sam is watching everything else. If you have questions, please get them in. We're going to touch on a lot of topics tonight. Chief, is there anything I missed? Anything you would like to add to your bio?
No, sir. That's enough. Let's go for it.
All right. Audience, get your questions primed and ready. We are going to get after it. Let's talk about the beautiful sponsors, of course, before we get going. Always start with the OG sponsor of the scrap, the originals, Kehoes. Check them out online at kehoes.com. Follow them on Facebook. Then there is the affordable bailout prop. Firefighter owned and operated, the affordable bailout prop allows you to practice window bailouts using a personal escape system, ladder bailouts, or ladder high points. The affordable bailout prop can roll under any 12-foot overhead door so you can train on the apparatus floor or in the parking lot. Call Steve or Dennis at 844-55-TOWER or drop an email to info@affordabledrilltowers.com. Firefighter safety and accountability starts with being able to quickly find and identify individual firefighters operating on the fire ground. Identifier safety combines the best in photoluminescent materials for durable firefighter identification solutions that can glow for up to 20 hours, no switches, no batteries, which means you being able to rapidly identify firefighters by name, unit, or assignment, even under hot fire conditions, all specifically designed and tested for the rigors of the job. Be seen on scene. Identifiersafety.com. And of course, I love Flame Decon 100%. Tara's in the crowd tonight on Instagram. So I love Flame Decon. So I always want to shout out to Flame Decon. So all that being said, there we go. Sponsors out of the way. Intros out of the way. Bios out of the way. Sam is here. Questions here. Audience logging in. Let me click and I'm going to get a little bit of what people are saying just to get a little hype going here. And away we go comes from Alan. Jace Roberts says, let's go. 3 exclamation points. Hey, fire family, let's go from Byron Medina. Fireman 718 said, let's get it. Vigilantes locked in and ready. Locked in and ready. There you go. I got to represent Vigilantes right here. I got to flash the hat. Windsor Heights Station 55 checked in, ready to go. Pump for tonight. Let's go from Zach Golombeski out of Kansas. Steve Scanlon said, LFG. Here we go. There's so many. Cody Brooks. Yes, I love it. Love it. Vigilantes are killing it. LFG checking in from North Florida from Cody. Yes, look at that chin. Superman himself is on the scrap. One. Yeah, I love it, dude. Okay, there's a ton of. Go back and read the comments because there's a ton.
Yeah, that's too much.
I love it. Okay, so all that being said, let's kick it off. Let's get going into it. Well, number one, overview of the Longview Fire Department. Big city tactics, small city. One of the busiest fire departments in the state of Texas per capita. So talk to me about it.
We are. We have just this unique situation in our community We only serve about 100,000 people, about 55 square miles. We have 8 stations, 7 engines, 3 trucks, and 6 medics. So we got 168 line personnel, and we run about 23,000 calls a year. Woo. So we're very busy, saturated as far as call volume. We do a fair amount of fire duty within our area, or the way that our community is laid out. You know, we're going anywhere from about 85 structure fires a year, and that's been over the past 10 years. And of course, those are, you know, some are better than the others, or some sure. are more extensive than the others. But as far as just per capita, the call volume and what we do here is just unique to this, to the East Texas area. But out of that, we are just one of the busiest communities within in the state of Texas. So
love it. I love it, man. And
it's a smaller town, but the way that we're set up, since we have so many people, we have 56 people, 46 are men staff during the day, but we're sending 24 people to a working fire. So our tactics are more of a bigger city tactics. So if we're going to, you know, a multiple dwelling, you know, we're sending 24 guys, and we're able to, you know, address our tactics appropriate in more of a bigger city or larger scale.
No, that is a blessing, because you almost get to have that urban feel, even though, and I say even though it's only 100,000. But when you say 8 stations, no, you are the American Fire Service, and you represent that so well, but you have a unique perspective because you do get to have that almost urban feel, which a lot of people don't get to have. You're on the busy side of...
Very much so.
I'm feeling it. Yeah. Dude, and you said 23,000 calls?
23,000 calls a year. You know, each station getting about 15, 20 calls a day, you know.
No, that's getting it on, because I've been like, yeah, that's getting it on. I don't care. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to do gorilla math real quick. 8 stations, 23,000. But that's getting it on. I love it. So one of the things I want to talk to you about, man, this is powerful, and we're moving right from, you know, just getting kind of where you work and all that kind of things and going straight into this, but your son, Layton, and how he's impacted your career. I don't want to speak for you. Just talk to me, and because you messaged me and said, I want to call this episode of The Scrap The Why.
Yes, sir.
And that was powerful, man. That's powerful, because I know you and I know your story a little bit, but share with me Layton and his impact on your career and the why.
So the why is so important in so many things. It's actually my favorite question that anyone asks, because there's a lot that goes into just that specific question. But let's start with how Layton impacts the why. So as we go throughout our career, we have to understand and remember what our why is. Why did we get into this profession? Why do we keep doing what we do? Why do we keep resilience? So for me personally, I think that everybody has a story, and everybody has had some hardships and growth pains, and they've got into a situation where is fit into this career. And so mine is Layton, and that's my son. He's 14 years old. He was born with some disabilities. He cannot walk. He cannot talk. But he is just the most amazing individual that you could imagine. He is he's the strength. He's so resilient that he is able to show how much power he has, but he doesn't even say a word. So his impact to me personally helped drive, you know, the decisions and responsibility of me in this career and just in life in general. But, you know, it's just amazing. Like he's brought so many people to faith. And he hasn't even said a word. So, I mean, if that's not a testimony of just, you know, what kind of character he is. We've had a really hard go over the first few years of his life, and went to some dark places. And, you know, ultimately, you know, we got strengthened some of our we got strengthened our faith and just become basically so honored just to have the responsibility to take care of him and for us to be his parents. And once we opened our eyes to that, it's just been so incredible. And he has just learned and sanctified us to, you know, everything that who we are as parents and relationships and coworkers and everything else in between. It's just driven by him. So he is the why that, you know, that I do anything that I do is always focused back on him.
Mm. No, it's powerful, man. And I've met Leighton, and I've been to your house, and perspective. That's what it's about. It's about perspective. Because how easy is it to lose perspective, or as human beings across the board? I'm not saying this in any judgmental way or non-judgmental way, but what is your perspective when people like complain about their kids or things they have to put up with or challenges? You know what I'm saying at all?
Perspective. Yeah. So in the beginning, I'll be honest with the, you know, with the audiences, it was tough in the beginning. Cause you know, we asked the question, why, you know,
why? Yeah. Why me? Yeah.
So in the beginning it was tough, you know, I'd hear somebody was saying about their child was, you know, throwing a fit or they were screaming or they had some difficulties at school or something like that. And, you know, my first reaction back then was like, well, at least they can go to school. At least they can talk. At least, you know, they can communicate.
Sure.
And that was kind of some immaturity of me. I had a lot of growth left to do. Now I just take it as an opportunity to just help put in perspective is as bad as we think that it is, it can always be worse. And as long as we can focus on some what the positive is, like Leighton for us, he smiles probably once or twice a day. But when he does, it just lights up the world, you know, and it may just be one time. But so I try to use him as experience. If somebody's having a really hard day and man, you can dive into like start drowning in some negativity. But there is always something good with whatever situation that you have going on in your life that you have to be able to harness and pull from that positive, you know, portion of what you have going on in your life. And,
right.
You know, Leighton, every single day that I'm at work for the 24-hour shift that we are, I never forget. I'm always thinking about him. I never forget. And it struggled because we don't know how long was going to live. We didn't know if he was going to live. We didn't really know much about it. But I really never allowed that to get too much impacted in the job. So a lot of people really didn't know what was going on in my life. I wasn't kind of really showing that because I was able to kind of separate the two once I got onto the job. And then when I leave the job, I leave the job and I go home. So with all that being said, I just use it as an opportunity. And what it has made me think is, you know, that's just my story. You have a story. The audience has a story. And it just made me realize how important your story is and what you may be going through that we don't know. So it's a good opener just to have conversation and begin the relationship to start caring about other people.
Love it, man. I love the perspective. I'm going to jump around on you. So, cause we got Sam pulling Facebook, YouTube, LinkedIn. I'm watching Instagram. First one's coming from Instagram and I'm going to throw it. You ready for your first question from the audience? And it goes back to Longview and your busyness. But Parker C OKC says, are you ALS staffing on your rigs?
We are. So we're in a very tough situation, just like every fire department in the country. We're 18 down, and we only have 182 max staff in our entire organization. So 18 down really puts us in a bind. And guess what those 18
they're all medics.
They're all medics, right?
Oh, yeah.
So we've had to be creative within our organization, and we're trying to send people through paramedic school. We're trying to create our own school. We're trying to streamline the process and get the paramedic certification in. But there's a lot of challenges with that. There's an extraordinary amount of challenges with that. But yes, all in all, the Longview Fire Department is designed to be 100% fire paramedics. So we have 6 ambulances, 7 engines, 3 trucks, all with paramedics on there running ALS responses.
There you go. Next question coming at you. And this is where I'm saying I'm swapping back and forth because it's going from calls to Leighton and back and the why. But he said, John Velez Jr. wants to know, coming at you from Texas, how has Leighton affected your demeanor at work and the people we serve?
That's a great question from a great individual. Mm-hmm. You know, that's one of my firemen in the battalion.
Oh, nice. What a
great guy and a great question. I mean, it's impacted. Honestly, it's just impacted everything, because anything, the decisions that I make, it really just relates back to all I want to do is, when I leave this whole thing, is I hope that one day he's proud of me. I hope one day he can understand and be proud of the things that I'm doing and the things that I deliver. So our whole objective is just really to be good people. And Leighton has taught me so much resilience and respect for people and patience. That's probably one of the biggest things that he's able to deliver for me. But going to the job for Leighton, is it can be so relatable to what we're going through with our relationships with individuals. You know, the whole model of being a battalion chief or a chief officer, in my opinion, is we take care of people who take care of people. Mm. That's it. Mm. It's as simple as that. You know, well, I really pull from that from Leighton, and he has just really been able to lay it out there for me about how important that truly is. Because we have to take care of him, and if we don't, guess what happens? You know, he doesn't thrive, or he definitely doesn't survive if we don't have that care for him. So, great question.
No, thank you, John. Jared Thornbury is coming at you, kind of along the same lines, almost the same question, but it's a little different. He says, "How has your son changed your perspective on your work-life balance?"
You know, to be honest, not a whole lot. You know, early in my career, I was just a good times fireman. I love being a fireman. I love going to fires, but I was just a good times fireman. Right. I really didn't know what I didn't know. I just loved coming to work. And I loved being on the job. So in comes Leighton. That passion never left from the time that, you know, I first started. There's definitely been a whole lot more stress added at work when, you know, something's going on with him medically, and, you know, that we're away from work. You know, sometimes that gets a little bit complicated, and, you know, up a lot at late nights, and, you know, sometimes we'll sleep all night at the station, which is rare, but, you know, I probably won't sleep just a couple hours just because I'm, you know, constantly thinking about that. However, I hope on the surface, or at least from the people that are under my command, I hope that they don't see too much of that affecting me, of just what my responsibilities are, what we're trying to focus on, what our goals are. I really just harness that kind of deep in if there's something that's really going on.
Right on. No, I love that. Because like you said, especially those that are close to you and know you the most, they can probably tell, hey, Chief, what's going on? You know what I'm saying? Or, you know, Chief's got stuff. We've all been there in the firehouse where, you know, something's going on, but I love the separation. And the, what really speaks to my soul is the fact that I've always loved being a firefighter since the very first time I got on, but I didn't appreciate the job. Does that make sense? Like, I've always loved it, but I was very immature. Yeah, that when you say it, I could feel a kindred spirit. And so I hope you take that as a, but I understood what you're coming from. JP Royes wants to know, have you found that your personal life's hurdles have helped you better serve the community, and more specifically, those with special care needs?
Yeah, there's definitely it pulls at your heart every time that, you know, I'm a battalion chief. I don't go on a whole lot of EMS calls, but if, you know, if I hear something with pediatric or seizures or special needs, I live in that world. So sometimes I'll go on the call with the guys, and mostly it's just there to talk to the parents, because the parents know so much about what their situation is. But what my job is basically just to comfort the parents and just have a conversation and be a little bit relatable with them. So yes, you know, it has just kind of filled my heart with that passion with those certain types of calls. You know, it's just a unique situation when you have a special needs child, and each one is different situation, but there's a common community with among all of us, you know. So some of that relatability, I think, is really paid off with some of those, you know, instances that, you know.
And I love the way you approach it and talk about it openly, because a lot of people are uncomfortable with it, you know what I'm saying? And you just take it on head on and talk about the vulnerability of it and everything like that. But it's not all you're about. And this is one of the things we bonded about even before I knew about Layton and this other side of the story. We bonded over tactics and radio traffic and you sending, hey, check out this radio traffic, check out this fire, you know? Yes. And so I definitely want to talk about, not just that, because the thing, it's powerful. And it could dominate everything. So I want to talk about all of it is what I'm saying. So
no, absolutely. I love talking shop, and that's where I get my peace and my comfort. The more I talk shop, the more I get peace in my own heart. So
here's your first one. Here's another one coming at you. Austin Gibbons wants to know, and again, you know, the scrap as good as anyone. It's driven by the audience and what they keep throwing at you. What is your number one piece of advice for a new officer that is leading people they rode next to in the back seat? Because you promoted pretty young, yes?
So, yes, I did. I promoted really young. I think I promoted to lieutenant when I was around 28 years old. So that's not easy. And I'll be honest with you, you know, there's not a really great answer or just a one-off answer for that. You know, I promoted – I was 28 years old. I go from the north side to the south side. I promoted to threes as a lieutenant, and there were some senior guys on there and really some good friends of mine. Matter of fact, one of the guys, you know, went on our family vacation with us, but I mean, he has 20 years on the job. You know, here I am 28 years old and now I'm his boss, you know.
Wow. Yeah.
Not like I was really, you know, the boss, you know, that he was the senior, you know, but being in that situation, I think that it pays off for your work ethic. And they have to kind of see and feel you out about where you're at. What are you going to, you know, what kind of direction are you going to try to lead? But I guess kind of backing up just a little bit is my definition of a leader is someone who has a reason to be followed. So you really need to answer that question before you even promote. So if you're in the back step and you're both on the tailboard together and now one day you promote, you know, I hope you have that answered. What is your reason to be followed? And everybody's reason, everybody's why is different, you know? So harness that, whatever that is, and you can magnify that and let that be the catalyst of what drives you to, you know, become a good leader. But it's not easy, you know, when you're a younger officer, especially when you just, the company officer is probably, I think, harder than it was for me than a battalion, because, you know, you're going from a driver. You know, I was a driver for my two or three years or something like that. Then I promoted into an officer. Well, you know, these guys have been in their position for 15 years, you know, and that's way longer than I've even been at this fire department. So have your non-negotiables that you will not waver on. Have some non-negotiables. OK, you know, if your non-negotiable is, I don't care if it's a fire alarm or a structure fire, you're going to have your gear, you're going to have your pack, you're going to have your tools, you're going to have your can, you're going to have your tick. Have your non-negotiables, but then kind of be a little bit lenient on other things and allow that crew to really empower them and come up with some of the plans and kind of take it a little bit slow, but just don't waver from your non-negotiables, because then they're going to walk on you a little bit and they're really going to test you, because I mean, that's what firemen do. That's what we're
absolutely,
all doing.
Absolutely. So,
you know, that would be my advice for that.
Dude, that's a brilliant piece of advice, but you really piqued my curiosity. I want to know, what is John Eric Johnson's? What's BC John Eric Johnson's? Like, I don't want to put a number on it. What's your top non-negotiables?
Oh, we don't have enough time on this scrap for that. everybody sitting in my battalion right now is thinking, well, there's probably 100 things that he is fixing to. The biggest things that I focus on is when you leave that door, when the tones drop, the job is on. You know, like not that I own you when the tones go off, but you know, like that's where my expectations for you start as soon as you leave that bay and go on that call. I'm pretty lenient on anything that goes around the station. I leave all of that for the company officers. They run their houses. They, you know, they manage their crews. But as soon as we get on a job, then, you know, then we have to, you know, follow the structure and the tactics and everything that we've designed and built amongst our crews. It is absolute non-negotiable. And here's really it is every call. I don't care if it's a fire alarm, a structure fire, a high rise, an industrial, it does not matter. As soon as the tones drop, it's my house and it's my family. I think that every single call that I go on, we went on a dumpster fire this morning. That was my dumpster. That was my business it was close to a structure. Well, I felt like that's my business. That was my dumpster on fire. So We're going to take care of it as it was our own. That's our job.
Boom. People, Gareth, I don't know, Juez, Gareth, anyway, he said there are hundreds and thousands of pet peeves.
That's true. That's a great man, by the way.
Awesome. I love it. I don't know which ones I've met because I don't know their names on Instagram, et cetera.
Yeah. So yeah.
I've met and had breakfast with some of them. I've sat down and broke bread with a few of them.
He's one. And I'll tell you, like, you know, we're going to get into, you know, what mentors mean to me and how many people is impacted me. But, you know, I've had the luxury, the pleasure. I really don't know how it even happens, but there has been some giants that has been able to mentor with me and who's latched onto me. And I'm just so grateful for that. But you just never know who's going to impact you in what areas. This guy, Juez, he was my tailboard when I was a captain at ones for 4 years. And he was my tailboard when I was a lieutenant down at threes as well. So we kind of spent a lot of time together.
Right.
But he has challenged me and he's made my growth so much. I mean, just exponential growth just because he asked a lot of why. Hey, or what's like, what would you do in this situation? What if we had a high rise? What if there's a fire on the second floor of a 3-story tenement? You know, how are we going to stretch this? And it's all night, every night. You know, he keeps me up until 2 o'clock in the morning. But I have so much value from that. Like, you know, I'm not who I am without him. So
right.
I'm grateful for that.
The constant honing, having to prove what you actually believe, having you dig into yourself and see what you actually believe.
Mm-hmm.
No, I love it. I absolutely love that because there is like, as you talk about him, I'm thinking about the people on shift that I think about saying, yeah, those late night conversations.
I love them. I love
those. They make the job. They make the job. Okay. I want to talk about four stages of competency.
Okay.
And how it relates to your career. Cause I
Okay. So we started off, right. My career, I was a good time fireman. I loved going to fires. I would go as deep as I could. But what my knowledge was basically get the hose line in place and discharge water. I mean, honestly, like I felt in the time, like I felt like I knew a little bit more than that. But in all honesty, that was what it was. Focus wasn't in training. My focus really wasn't in winning. The only win that I knew was just, you know, get some water going where it needed to go. And that's just kind of how I grew up in the fire service. And so it was a good times fireman. You know, I really didn't take things as serious as what I do now for sure. I didn't look for any outside training. I didn't, you know, really latch on to just knowing the job. I'll be honest with you. You know, even forcing a door, you know, like I didn't even know what tools to use for forcing a door. I may have brought an axe. I may have brought a halligan. I may have brought a boot. I just didn't know. I just didn't know what I didn't know. So that kind of brings us into the four stages of competency is at that stage of my career, I was just unconsciously incompetent. And we'll break that down to I didn't know what I didn't know.
Right on.
So let's make an example of like stretching a hose line. Okay. Well, back then, I didn't even know the word stretch. We pulled the hose off and we got it in place. Right? I didn't know what stretch means. So, you know, so that's how it was. Now, as I kind of got a little bit more depth in my career and I started getting around a little bit more people who are passionate about the job and, you know, who were in a different season than the other people that I was around and me, myself, Then they started like saying, hey, you know, there is a lot to stretching hose, you know, getting the right hose, you know, getting, get it in line with the door. We're going to go hinge side, you know, for our attack. We're going to make sure that we have our hose and short bikes as close to the, entry as we can. Yeah. And so now they're starting to identify these. So now I become consciously incompetent.
Right.
Now
right.
I know what I don't know. And I found out that there was a lot of that. And so I didn't know really what it was entailed of how to even stretch the hose line. Well, in that particular phase, that's the growth stage, in my opinion. That's where you need to dig in and you need to find out what is the right way and start getting some reps in.
Right.
And start training and practicing. And practice to win, practice it.
That's the fork in the road. That's where you can say, that's where you can either grow or you can bury your head in the sand. And that's the absolutely. Separation of excellence.
And if you bury your head in the sand, guess what? You're going to go in the opposite direction. You're going
absolutely.
To go back to you don't know what you don't know.
Right.
Now we're going in, we're stretching the hose. Now we've done some classes, we've done some drills, and now we got some 100 reps under our belt. Now we start becoming consciously competent. So now we know how to stretch the hose, but we have to think about how we stretch the hose.
Right.
So
on.
We carry a modified Minuteman in most of our rigs in Longview. So for me, I'm a battalion chief, but I don't stretch a lot of hose, but it is a passion of mine getting a hose line in place. So now that I'm consciously competent at this stage, okay, so I'm going to go to the rig. I'm going to shoulder the 100-foot bundle. I'm going to reach back. There's going to be two ears. I'm going to grab the two ears. I'm going to clear the bed. I'm going to drop the first loop as soon as it clears the bed. I'm going to hold the top loop. Then I'm going to walk. And then as soon as I get to the target, I'm either going to V-split or I'm going to quarter in forward, and I'm going to lay my hose out accordingly, right? But I've had to think about all of those steps along the way.
Right.
Okay. Now let me get some more reps and let me understand and really get focused on in perfecting that skill or not perfecting that skill, but kind of mastering some of that skill. And now I become unconsciously competent. Now, when I go stretch that hose line, I put it on my shoulder and I go, well, now I'm thinking about, okay, what's the offset of this house? What is this house? Is it a 1.5? Is it a 2-story? Where is the smoke at? Well, I'm looking for the fastest smoke coming from the smallest opening. What kind of obstacles am I going to come across when I'm making this stretch? And that's really just it in a nutshell is those four stages of competency. And it will go along with your whole career in just all these different seasons. And that's just one example of stretching hose. Were you talking about moving from firefighter to driver up to officer, now battalion chief? Man, that season just it keeps on and keeps on. And it's just revolving as far as those four stages go.
I love the four stages and how you lay it out right there. Now we got more questions coming at you from the audience. So, this is a curveball or a fastball, at least. Blake Ball 32 says, "What do you?" This is a tough one. I'm sorry, but it's coming at you. What do you recommend be done if there is an officer who lacks knowledge and skills to do the job, and it's no secret up the chain of command? However, they don't do anything about it.
You know, that's tough because every fire department has it. I'm sure that your fire department has the same situation. And we're battalion chiefs. We're chief officers and over some of the officers that may not be meeting to the high expectation. So it all really becomes to a department or organizational standard. I'm guessing that your fire department probably doesn't have a lot of strong organizational standards, because when you do have those, it's a little bit harder for that to kind of fall through the cracks.
Right on.
Okay. So as the organization, you have to build standards and those non-negotiables before you even get to this point. But that's not the case. You have this. It is very difficult. But as long as there's will, as long as there's a drive that the individual has, I think that it's our responsibility is we just need to care about people. And when we go and we address this officer, he's either as a chief or as the company, you know, we all have a meeting at the kitchen table and, hey, you know, we just kind of lay out the truth and like, hey, what are we going to do about this situation? Well, if we truly care about each other and we care about people, then what we're going to do is we're going to have to make some decisions of, well, how can we bring him up? What are some ways that we can address certain situations of wherever the deficiencies are and, you know, really start working with him? And in all honesty, if you go into it with all you're doing is just caring for the individual, they become a little bit more open. And now they're like, okay, well, I know where your true heart is. You're not just trying to, you know, throw me under the bus. You really just want to, you want me to get better. So it's easier said than done. I'll be honest with you. I've gone through that with my career as well. You just have to do your best. And if you give everything and it's for the right reasons, then, you know, if it's going to happen, if it's going to make a difference, it will. If it doesn't, if there's still deficiencies, you know, that's when the organization itself and that's when the chief officer levels and the organization that really have to take a look into, well, is it substandard or is our organization, you know, need to create some more standards so that we don't come across this again? No, that'd be my recommendation.
No, and it's powerful and a great, great answer. Great, great question. There's no good answer for the question because basically what you're saying is, well, basically what you have to ask is, does my organization have a standard that this person is meeting or not meeting? And if they're meeting the standard, even though it's a mediocre, below par, below what it should be, if they're meeting the standard of your organization, don't waste energy on it. Focus on what you can control. Now, when I say don't waste energy on it, absolutely try to bridge a gap and build a relationship with that person and say, hey, do you understand that you're, you know, through communication and things like that. But if they're meeting the standard of your organization, then you are heading down a road of high amount of frustration if you try to expend energy trying to change that.
Yeah. And I think we really have to put it in perspective, right? The guys know that's watching, they're in the 1C battalion. I hope that they're all watching tonight. But they know, like, my expectation for them on the fire ground is so high that I'll be honest with you, they probably are not going to meet my expectation. And that's hard to say, and that's hard to really, you know, get that out there. But if they go to the roof and they don't give me a roof report to start with, you know, that's one of my pet peeves, you know, that they said I have 100. But if they go up on the roof report and they miss something out of the roof report, well, you know, they just missed the standard. They missed that standard. You know, if they didn't go to the rear and they didn't give a size up of the Charlie on a strip because they gave the roof report, they hit everything but the rear. Well, that was one of the most critical portions of giving a roof report because that may be the first eyes that we get on the Charlie side. Right. Yeah, we got fire blowing out two windows somebody hanging from a balcony on the Charlie. Well, that's the first people that we got eyes. So, but in all honesty, like I say that, and that my expectation is so high, it's almost unachievable, to be honest with you. So we have to kind of put it in perspective, is where is our level of expectations for standard, you know, as far as what we expect and what an organization expects, there has to be, you know, they call it the 10%er for a reason, you know. You know, not there's not going to be 182. There's not going to be even the FDNY. They're the greatest fire department in this nation. They got 13,000, you know, firemen. You know, they still have 10% in the FDNY as well.
Right on, man. Man, so many questions. Hold on. I'm about to sneeze one more time. Sorry. I apologize, John. All right. Good. So many questions coming at you. Gareth. Leave him in the recliner and stretch in the bay. Work the door prop. Get your mask drills tight. Love it. Chris Ames said, how do you – okay, there's more questions coming. I'm going to come over here. Something got a hold of me. I'm sorry. I'm not sure if my wife's spraying something in the house or what, but something's going on. Christopher Snow said – what you kind of touched on this, but I want to get to this question. What are some expectations you have for your battalion, and how do you ensure that those expectations are met? And I'm assuming he's asking if they're above and beyond the organizational standard. So I'm assuming that part, but I want to know, how do you push people beyond the organizational standard, according to Chief John Eric Johnson?
You know, it takes a lot of time, you know. You have to have a few jobs to kind of really really build those all of those expectations in. But I mean, there's just so many, you know, as far as let's just say working a fire. Me personally, my expectations are you have positional assignments. Okay. And we have a play, we have a playbook in our battalion, right? If we catch a fire and it's under these residential setting, we'll say the first due engine, they're going to be the fire group. Okay. And now we call it a group because now just by saying that, that's a higher expectation. We didn't say, hey, you're a fire tech, right? This is a group. So now that the company officer becomes truly a group supervisor. So now he is responsible for that function. And I want him to feel the gravity of that responsibility because everything that I attach to them is he is their boss. He decides if there needs to be a second line, where the second line needs to go, whether there's a protection line. Unless I specifically assign that, I'm going to give him people. So he becomes a contractor. All right. So let's say that he's a painter and we're going to paint this wall behind me. Okay. So I just assigned you as the painter. Well, you're going to go in there and you're going to say, hey, I got enough resources. I got enough paint. I'm good. I can paint these walls. Or then you get her. Or if it's the opposite, hey, chief, this is a bigger job than we thought. We need some more painters. And that's my job as a battalion to get them some more. But I assigned them that group supervisor. So they're the first new engine company. They're going to stretch a hose line. And that is kind of a non-negotiable for me unless very, very extenuating circumstances that there's an immediate need for rescue. Okay. If we got somebody from hanging from a window,
Absolutely.
The majority of everything is that first new company, they have to get the line in place. Now, here's the expectations. That line, you have 90 seconds to get that line in service for, you know, a reasonable amount of obstacles that you're going to encounter. Like, I want you to get the hose line in place as efficient as you possibly can, because what that is going to do is once you get it in place between the fire and the rest of the building is you're going to create so much of a better environment. You're going to create lift. You're going to create cooling. You're going to create ventilation. Everything is going to start with that. How goes the first line? It goes to the fire.
Love it.
It's been true and true to every single fire that I've ever been on.
Love it. Love it.
So that's my expectation, you know. And then, you know, the second company, now they're going to come in and they're going to search. You know, the third company is going to drop a line and then they're going to be the backup line. Truck company is going to go in to vent the roof. And then the second truck company they're going to be an active writ. So I assign them actually active writ on the radio. I say those words so that they just don't immediately think that they come to the front yard, they lean on their tools, or maybe they do a 360. No, they're active. So they need to be throwing ladders. They need to be forcing doors, leaving them closed, taking burglar bars, preventing the mayday, getting utilities. They are still working. Now they need to conserve some of their energy, but they are active. They are trying to benefit our situation. So with all that said, there's a play. Okay, and that's my expectation is that big play. And when something doesn't work or something is delayed or somebody is not being in charge of their particular group, or if I assign them some more people and they're not managing those people, now the expectation is a little, you know, they didn't meet that expectation. Now, all in all, a lot of times, man, we have it so good. We have such good firemen who really want to do a good job. And they do a good job. They actually are killing it right now.
Right on.
I couldn't be more proud of how they act. But as far as, hey, that's battalion expectations is we're going to take this job serious because it is.
Love it. I love that right there. Take this job serious because it is. You have to go back and read the chat because there's a lot of people chattering and it's good. It's good. And in a good way, not in a bad way. Joe Gavita wants to know, how much did you rely on your senior man as a young company officer, and what was the most important thing that you learned from them?
Yeah, that's a good question. I'll be honest with you. So I was still in a stage and a season that, you know, I didn't understand the job fully when I promoted to officer. It wasn't until this time when I promoted to the company officer, and we have lieutenants in our department, so a lieutenant is at a multi-company station where there's a captain on the ladder truck. The lieutenant is on the engine.
Okay.
So you have somebody there that can help you along the way, a mentor. So to be honest with you, I relied heavily on him as more than so than the senior man in most circumstances. Because when I promoted to lieutenant is when I truly met my first mentor that I've had in my entire career. I never had a mentor up until this time. I didn't really know about the job. And this was Captain Valerie at Threes. There is no doubt that he was able to take the passion and the desire that was inside and just elevate that, elevate it into some intellect. And I'm so grateful for even having the opportunity to meet with him. But I got to work hand in hand. Let me tell you about this individual.
Okay.
He's a Green Beret. He was at 9/11. He was at Katrina. Hmm. He's been on the task force for 20 years. He's been on a truck company for 11. He is just a phenomenal human being and smart. He is so smart. Like there's just, you know, he plays a game with me and he says that give me a subject and I'm going to teach you five things that you don't know about it. And, you know, I love playing that game, you know, because I learned so much from him, you know, and, but that's really what really sparked, as far as me, my growth was boom. That's where it hit. So I just want to be honest is I relied on him more than the senior when I first promoted to lieutenant. Now I had the luxury of having a captain at my station. So now I go off on my own. I promote a year and a half later and I go to, ones, which is a downtown. It's the most busiest station that we have in our department and it catches the most work. So as I go there, well, one of the firefighters I was talking about earlier, he followed. Well, he truly was that senior man.
Right.
And I got to lean on it, everything, because I'll be honest with you. Like I'm really not that good. I'm really not that good at a lot of things. You know, I just have a lot of good people around me.
Right.
And, they were able to manage. He was able to manage the station life for me. He was able to talk to people. You know, I'm kind of more of an introvert and he was able to, you know, bridge that gap, even just to, building relationships and kind of open me up out of my own shell, you know, get me into different, you know, situations. But when I was a captain, now I'm the only officer at that station. So I heavily, heavily relied on that senior man and on the job. OK, so we go to a fire. Well, guess what? I don't know at all. You know, as an officer, we got to know some things. You know, we have to have a pretty good understanding of you know, some what's going on. But I definitely, even now, like there's so much that I don't know. Like I feel insufficient every day that I go to work. But man, if you rely on other people, everybody adds value to the situation. And the senior man does. And he did every situation. So
love it. Oh God, I said love it. I love it. I really do. It's a great answer, man. It's a great answer and well articulated. Fireplug 73 has another curveball coming out. I say curveball. It's a commonly asked question that's a tough one to answer, but I'm still gonna throw it at you because I love your perspective. How do you respond? You're a battalion chief, you have a high performing crew in your battalion, but they are always critical of the decisions that administration is making above you. How do you handle that?
Oh, this isn't a hard question.
Oh, I love it. I love the answer already. See, another love it.
I live this, you know, I'm fortunate to be honest with you. I oversee four stations as a battalion chief. So
right on.
Six company officers, because there's two lieutenants in my battalion. They're high functioning. Now they're in the action. So they are in the area where we catch a lot of jobs. Okay. And they like to go to fires as much as I do, but they're high performing. There are crews that are, man, they're bang up. If it, just like what Tim Klett says, right? Lieutenant Tim Klett from the FDNY, he pulled up to a fire. His chief, he was parked three rigs down and, the chief ordered him, Lieutenant Klett, three rigs down that was in staging up to take over the job, because that chief had so much trust in that crew that they were going to get assigned the hard job.
Right.
Well, I have a couple of crews just like that, you know, and if there's a hard job there, they are going to get assigned. They're high functioning. They train every single day, you know, from start to finish. We really don't stop talking about the job. We don't really stop training. And, but hey, you know, we're firemen too. Right? Everybody is firemen. And we, sometimes we focus our energy in a little bit, you know, different place than what it should be. So as far as like the question goes, is administration, okay, we got a high functioning crew, but they're not happy with administration. Well, first of all, I'll be honest with you, you know, I probably, you know, not going to make a whole lot of friends after this, but you know, I'm their boss at the end of the day. So if there's something that's unhappy, that's in my control, well, then they're unhappy with me. They're not unhappy with administration. There's very few things truly that the administration level can impact or influence on our daily day-to-day task that really mess with anything that we have going on. And if you really truly break it down, I control the battalion. The captain controls the station. The individuals control their own, you know, personal views of anything, right? So out of any of that, I didn't hear anything out of from the admin perspective. Now, yes, there are definitely things that are going to happen in every fire department that we're not happy with, and we, you know, we would do it differently, or I can't believe that they're doing this. I can't believe they're coming out with that. But if just step back, right? Let's go way back to the beginning. Is when I was early on, and you asked me the question about how I felt about parents who had typical children, and right. You know, they were fussing and they were being bad and they were being that. Well, if we just put that in perspective, well, at least they're able to do that. So if we kind of pull that really mentality into the situation about our perspective about things, is like, well, truly, is it that bad, or are we just really focusing our energy in an area that we shouldn't be?
Right.
And that's most of the time that's the case.
Right. The perspective. You brought a full circle.
Now, but I do want to tell you something. And it's going to tie into both of these.
Okay.
Is the fire department in general, okay, I think that the people in the field, they have valid concerns right now, because the world is changing. There's so much that's going on. There's so much going on in the fire service. The craftsman days are kind of becoming more limited. The people wanting to be involved in the fire service are becoming limited. We're 18 down. I'm sure you're 10 down. You know, Houston's, they're 400 down, 400 right. Paramedics down. I mean, so it's just
across the border, everywhere.
Right. But this is what I want to tell to the organizations out there that if any are listening, is you cannot get stuck on a vision that you've had for 20 years. I told you at the beginning, our fire department is set up to be paramedics, and the whole fire department, you know, 182 people are supposed to be paramedics and fire cert. And it's just reality is just, it's just, we can't do that right now. And we're just trying to make waves. Well, guess what? Me and Rachel had a vision of what kind of parents we wanted to be before we had Layton. Guess what? We weren't going to take him to school. I mean, we were going to drive him to school. He wasn't going to ride the bus. He was going to be in football. We were going to be in sports. We had this vision of what kind of parents we're going to be, right?
Right.
Let's take him to church, and let's, you know, we had all of this vision. But when Layton was born, our vision had to change because Layton's needs changed. So if we would have kept the same vision that we had and we didn't shift it, guess what? Layton doesn't thrive, or he doesn't survive.
Yes.
As the fire department, as an organization, if you don't shift your vision to meet the needs of your internal and your external customers, then you're either not going to thrive or you're not going to survive. So that would be the perspective that I would ask for the organizations to look at, is it's okay. Well, is me and Rachel a bad parent because we adjusted our vision? I would hope the answer would be no. I don't think that we're bad parents. We just not the parents that we originally set out to visualize. But now we're just in this other lane. And, you know, if something else changes, then we're just going to shift our vision. Okay. And there's a lot going on. There's a lot going on in every fire department right now. Layton takes five seizure medicines four times a day. That's 20 doses of seizure medicines just to keep him at an acceptable seizure limit. But guess what? We've been on probably 30 seizure medicines, but we have to analyze, and seizure medicine comes out. Okay.
Right, Fintepla right.
comes out. And we say, all right, we got to do a risk analysis. Okay. Is this going to be worth the side effects for him to take this medicine? Yes or no? And if the answer is yes, then okay, we're going to try this. We're going to try this medicine and give it to him. Okay. Now we're going to see if it works or if it doesn't work. If it doesn't work, guess what? We're going to say, hey, that didn't work. And we're going to go a different route.
Right.
Well, that may take some time. So we have to be patient, but the fire department can do the same thing. Is we have to try certain medicines for our organization to make it successful.
Right.
And, you know, we may try a few and they don't work, because I know for sure that, you know, some seizure medicine just, it made things worse. And we're like, hey, sorry, you know, we just didn't pick the right one. And we're going down a different route. But now we have five seizure medicines that are really doing pretty good, you know? So, you know, that's the kind of outlook that I have at it. And,
I love the perspective of your original thought. Like you said, this is what we're going to do. This is what success looks like. This is what, this is normal. And then along comes life and says, hey, how are you going to handle this? And then you adapted, you overcame, and honestly, through that process, probably learned to say, okay, how do we adapt even better in the future? How do we stay adaptable? Man, I love the parallels that you have for this, man. It's just there's so much there. So I really do appreciate the perspective, because there's so much. One thing I want to throw in here: you mentioned Timmy Klett, because he's one of my favorite people, and he actually mentioned a comment here, so I had to read it, because I love it when the guest brings it up and then they get to say something. But he absolutely said, "A great chief knows the ability of all his companies." Mm. So.
You know, so let me, I have to talk about Lieutenant Tim Klett. I didn't know him from Adam until a couple of years ago. I took a class with you.
Yes.
In Florida. It was end of the day. And I found out later on that Lieutenant Klett almost didn't even teach the class, because we were kind of late in the day. People have gone long. And it was like, man, I'm just out.
And it was a leadership class, which...
Officer class,
yeah, right? Who wants a leadership class at the end of the day?
Oh, yeah. And you know what? You know, he thought that everybody was going to fall asleep. And we were at the edge of our seat the entire time in that class.
Killer.
The fire service right now, I know at least in my department, the men beg for a formal company officer development program. Okay? Like, they want it. Well, I tried to develop one when I was a battalion. And it's not easy. It's not easy. And who am I to say that I'm the best captain that ran the best station? And you know, I'm trying to tell senior captains of, you know, how they should respond and, you know, what they should do. And, you know, that whole, you know, can you be a prophet in your own land, you know, situation.
Right, right.
You know, it honestly wasn't successful. I did not do a good job with trying to teach a formal company officer level class. So now in comes Lieutenant Klett. As soon as he opened his mouth and he started talking about company officer development and leadership at the company, at the station, and on the job, I've just never heard such a great message come from someone with that. If you want to be a good company officer, you need to go check out him. You need to check his class out. You need to get him there, because he is able to articulate and break down a message of how to be that true company officer.
But when he started talking about trust,
and how to be, oh, it's amazing.
Yeah. Right? No, absolutely. No, 100%.
He's phenomenal. You know,
just to sing the praises. But no, that day, I'm telling you, that was the best class of the day, the closing class. And I was just like, whoa. And so, and the fact that it almost didn't happen. Anyway, it was great, man. Unbelievably great. Mm-hmm. One of those things, you had to be there.
Yeah. You got to take it. You got to take it.
Okay. Still throwing stuff at you. Still throwing. Got that senior man question. All right. John Velez coming at you one more time. Ask Chief to explain the importance of the if this, then this approach. If this, then that.
Okay. So, you know, this is really about, I guess, my identity as a chief officer, or as an instructor, or, you know, as a fireman is, I've gone to a lot of classes over the years, a lot of great classes. I think one of the first classes I went to, maybe with Nozzle Ford, by Aaron Fields, which is phenomenal, amazing individual, made a huge impact in the fire service, and we're lucky to have him. You know, a search class, a ladders class, all of these, specific functions on the fire ground. And, over the years, I never had a class that was like, hey, if you have a fire in a type 3 strip, one story flat roof, fire extending into the cock loft, what do you do?
Right.
Okay. Now, we're grateful to have Chief Vincent Dunn, and he's wrote some amazing tactics that, really outline that. And, that's the gospel of the fire service, in my opinion, is him. But really no one was teaching that, right? If this, then this. Okay. If you have a fire in a 1.5, what does that mean? What does even a half story mean? We didn't even know what a half story was.
Sure.
So the if this, then this is really the whole concept about, what we're trying to do in our training, training company, what we're trying to do with the conference that we're hosting soon. But I took a class, and I don't know if he was at this one. This was in Galveston. I think it was at Third Coast Fire Conference, I think, in Galveston area.
Was it HEMA or was it?
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, I was there.
And so in comes this guy, and he walks up, and his name was Chief Mike Turpak.
Turpak.
I had no idea.
No.
Never heard of him in my life.
That's where I met him, yes.
Okay, you were there. Okay, great. Yes.
A Bobby De Niro firefighter, you know what I'm saying?
So he started speaking, and he taught a size-up class. But really, honestly, what he spoke to me was he taught if this, then this. The hose line is placed here. The vent is placed here. The window is timed here. The backup line goes here. The whole class was very specific of what that happens. What happens as far as the tactics go, man. And it blew my mind. I was like, this is it. This is the guy. Well,
I don't want to derail you. I want you to stay on topic. I didn't know you were at that because I met so many people there. So go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah.
I did derail you. I'm sorry.
No, it's fine. No, he was the guy.
Right.
So he was someone who I truly wanted to latch on to. Fortunately, we became really good friends. When I send you an audio or a clip, well, it goes to Chief Turpak, Chief Phillips, and a few others.
Nice.
Captain Valerie. And they review my audio, video, and pictures. And they send back and like, hey, you did okay here. You sucked here.
You blew here. Yeah. No.
But Chief Turpak is that person. He is able to give constructive feedback about what the call was and why, really give that why. Hey, if you have a two-story house, you got fire on two floors, okay, first and second division, they're both on fire. Well, the first hose line goes to the first division. The second hose line goes to the second division. The third hose line goes and protects the stairs for the means of egress of the second line, okay? And then he says why. Well, if you take the second hose line if you take the first hose line to the second division and the fire's underneath and you fall down, well, you fall down in a pit of fire, Okay, well, why do we have a backup line manage the stairs? Well, that's their only means of egress from the second division. He is able to just put it all together. Just
breaks it down in a simplistic way. You're like, no, duh. Of course.
Yeah,
of course.
Yeah, really.
Why did I think of that?
And he wrote an amazing book. And just like Chief Vincent Dunn, and I think Chief Vincent Dunn, even in one of his books, references Chief Turpak about how much he respects his strategies and tactics, which is amazing, because mm-hmm. that is the goat of the fire service. But he wrote a book of tactics, Chief Turpak did. And it says, if you have a fire in a brownstone, if you have a fire in a church, if you have a fire in a strip, these are the things that you need to consider. And, man, that's it for me. Like that's what we need. That's what the fire service needs.
Fire ground size up. I thought so. I didn't want to get it wrong. So I did a quick Google search. He wrote fire ground size up for fire engineering, Mike Turpak.
So yeah, and there's an operational guideline with Chief Turpak. And I think Chief Frank helped write that.
Love it. I will say love it, everybody. So, because they've already been making fun of me for saying love it too much, but that's fine. I will say love it over and over and over. So many questions coming at you, but there's some things I want to get to because I still have to get the five questions. I still have to get books. I still have to do all the stuff that the scrap is known for, but I also want to talk about the fire, the grabs that you're going to talk about at firemanship. I don't want to take away from firemanship at all, but I would love to hear a little bit about that fire and the grabs that were made.
Okay. So, you know, there was a question earlier on and I'll try to write down the name, but you gave it to me a little fast, but they asked a, you know, how to, you know, how do you make your mark when you first promote and how do you, you know, build that foundation when you first promote? Well, let me tell you how fortunate I was when I was a battalion chief is I just promoted battalion chief. I was only 35 years old when I promoted battalion chief, and which is really young.
That is young.
In our organization, or, you know, it's just being a chief officer.
In general, and, yes.
You know, when I promoted there, I really, you know, leading when you're young is one thing, but understanding the gravity of responsibility of your position is so much more than even that. Well, I was fortunate enough to have my first fire to command as a battalion chief was a major fire. We went two alarm fire of a strip that extended into the cock loft and running horizontal, and it caught multiple stores within the strip on fire.
Wow.
And man, we were fighting hard, and I allowed the guys to work 38 minutes offensive on this fire. And we were doing a roof vent trench, and we had multiple lines in place. We forced a Charlie door. We're opening up some windows, and
And it's running in the cock loft. So yeah, I get it. Yeah, I get it. Yeah.
Major fire, you know, there's a lot that I think that I did wrong on that call, but as far as the men's perspective, they were happy. They were satisfied about the way that I ran that scene, and they felt a little bit of security, and they felt a little bit of like respect. I guess I kind of built some respect during that time.
Hell yeah! You're young, you're newly promoted, and you catch a major fire, and you do. I don't even care if you do well; you just don't show your ass. You had to have earned a ton of respect. You may not say that.
That was month one. So, you know, that was the springboard for everything that led up to my career.
Okay.
So once I started to, earn some respect, you know, and gain their trust. So you got to earn respect and you got to gain trust. Okay. The trust, when that trust falls off, you don't have respect anymore. So you have to maintain, you know, continuity between the two.
Right.
For the next 4 years, we were just after it. We were just engaged. We were training all together. We were learning. We were taking classes together. About 2 weeks before this major fire that we're going to discuss is, they end up breaking the battalion chiefs up and moved all the battalions. So we got pulled from our district, and now we move shifts and we move battalions.
Just an administration move, or just politics,
it was a move.
Okay. Without getting into the details. Okay.
Yeah. So it was a move, and about 2 weeks, you know, 2 weeks prior to that, you know, I was talking to the guys. I'm just, you know, kind of, you know, closing up some things that I needed to, you know, discuss with them. And one of the classes was like, you know, I'm so proud of the men that worked and the women that worked underneath. Underneath my command, you just couldn't believe the mutual respect and the hard work that we had and hopefully continue to have. They're just amazing individuals. But we were teaching a class, and I was like, I live as a battalion chief through them. So it's hard standing out in the front yard, right, and running command. Things, you know, you know what I'm talking about. You know, they're stretching hose, they're flowing water, they're saving people. And I made a comment. It's like, you know, I'll never, I'm 40 now, but, the days are probably pretty much limited, but by the time that I'm going to have a rescue or grab now that I'm a battalion.
Right.
So anyways, we had this conversation. Well, 2 weeks later, we have a Super Bowl fire. It's 4 o'clock in the morning. We get dispatched to a garden apartment. It's two up, two down. It's through and through. The fire's in the top left. It's blowing out two windows, and we have three teenage girls trapped in the top garden apartment. I'm the second due chief to the fire. I'm behind the first. The first due chief there is probably a minute behind him. Now, we're fortunate in our in the way that our city lays out. We get 24 people, right? We send six, seven rigs to a fire. They rarely all show up at the same time. And that's so we can really just throw out a lot of tasks at one time.
Sure.
So I get en route. It's 4 o'clock in the morning. And, you know, the traffic comes in and we got a confirmed entrapment in the apartment. And so we upgrade the call. We transmit the second alarm. We call for some more help and still going to the fire at this time. I'm kind of behind the engines a little bit. And the call starts really intensifying and elevating. And first we just had one victim trapped. And now it's starting to come that we have multiple. So the first chief gets on scene. He gets his eyes up. And, you know, it's a top left garden apartment. And it's attached on both ends. So, we have some difficulties as far as the construction goes. And so he starts assigning people to obviously rescue. We're in rescue mode. He assigned somebody to execute a window-based rescue. One was hanging from a window. The first new company did a phenomenal job. And less than, I think, 48 seconds is what we had it at. They executed a ground ladder rescue from there.
That is phenomenal. Yeah,
it's just phenomenal. And guess what? It came from a rookie. Woo. And
you got to be proud of that. You got to be proud of that.
So much so.
Yes.
So then, you know, some more units started getting assigned and it was just kind of like everybody got assigned search and I'm still approaching the scene. And I've noticed that four rigs have already got the assignment of search. And, that's a lot of people. It's a lot of resources on one function.
Yeah.
And so at that time, I knew that I was going to be the inside chief because that's too many people, for the companies. And at that same token, I really felt like this was going to be their worst day that we've encountered. You know, we've had seven grabs since 2019, but this was a bad one. Mm-hmm. You know, this is multiple and they're young. And so I really just wanted to be there for them and try to – bring some calmness. You know, that was my intent. That's what I wanted to do as the inside chief is just to say, hey, I'm here, you know, to help and be with you. So the companies go in and they're doing a phenomenal job. The line got stretched so quick up the stairs. It's a straight stair to the top left. The hose line got charged. It opened up. There's fire blowing out the back slider fell. There's fire blowing out of the rear. There's fire blowing out of the front and wrapping around from a kitchen window. The nozzle goes in and completely blacks out the fire in just a matter of seconds. Just a matter of seconds. It's just one of those that
just the right water
at the right time killed it. So I follow in line with them and we go in. And, we get the fire knocked down. And now we're starting to search. I take a left down a hallway and I meet up with some guys. So my intent was, hey, I'm going to try to bring some calmness to everybody and calm everybody down. And I came up to this fireman and said, hey, it's Chief Johnson. You know, I'm just here to help. And he said, hey, Chief, we just searched the bedroom. We haven't found anything. We're moving to the rear. And it's lights out. There's zero visibility.
Right.
It's hot as, you know, and but it's lights out. Well, Chief Phillips, which is a huge mentor out of Houston Fire Department.
Houston, yeah.
He has latched onto me like you wouldn't believe. He is my number one mentor. He's probably had more grabs in the Houston Fire Department than any other employee. And he probably won't admit that, but that's what I've been told by some. And he said he's never found a victim standing up. So he says, get low. You know, it's kind of a simple, you know, pro tip. So I got low. Hey,
if all you get out of this scrap is that right there, get low.
Well, I took that like reality is I laid my face on the floor on the carpet and try to look under the smoke. Well, the smoke is banked all the way down and I can only see about a foot with my face at the floor. So it's a tough one. It's a really tough one. And anyways, I meet up with them and this fireman says, hey Chief, we just searched this bedroom and now we're going to go to the rear. We haven't found anything yet. And I was like, my goodness, like he just calmed me down way more than I calmed him down. I was like, how did he even do this? You know, and boom, we just fall into the rear and you know, he goes to wall two. I go through the door next. I go straight to the bed to wall three and start sweeping the bed. And he locates a victim. And so come over and he has the victim just so quickly in position, ready to carry. Of course, we can't see anything, but we can feel, you know, what position they're in. And then out we go. So helped him, you know, guide a little bit. And got to deliver him, passed that victim off. And, you know, another firefighter off the nozzle branch, off the hose line branched off and went right back to the room. Cause we have three victims, three known victims. We got two, now we got one left. And he went in there and did a phenomenal job and found the third victim. And we removed that victim, from the building. And I think it was 3 minutes and 30 seconds that we rescued all three victims, out of the whole situation, and had them transporting within 4 minutes and they're unresponsive and our medical team, our ambulances did a great job and were able to, was able to get those two back and it was, you know, it was just a phenomenal team.
Yeah. Sub 4 minutes, you know, from arrival, man. That's unreal.
This was the Super Bowl fire, you know, yeah. our whole career,
what you
everything
live for.
That we did is it, you know, came in at this moment. I really honestly didn't do a whole lot in there at the job. I was just there and I was grateful to be there, but to see what they have accomplished and where they came and where they are now and how they performed on the Super Bowl fire. And when I say it's seamless, like no fire really goes seamless. Yeah. How do you even get better than the 3 minutes and 38 seconds? I just don't know if it's even possible. You know, we what if it to death, but they worked so hard and they did such a good job. It just brought it full circle for me. And I was grateful for that.
I know you probably cannot answer this, but how much vindication do you feel for your mindset?
You know, I'm just proud. I'm just proud of them. You know, I will tell you, like, you know, we're going to present this at firemanship. It was Cody Trestrell who made that scene possible. Mm. I took a class from Cody in Denver at the Mile High, was a VS Beyond the Door, and two of their guys along that made this grab took that class. Mm. And we owe everything to him. So I've reached out to him several times and, you know, I cannot thank him and his cadre enough for, you know, giving the quality training that they do and the amount of time and effort that they spend in their training. But it was because of them that was successful. So, humbled and honored and just proud. It was the most proud moment of my entire career for the men because they won. And that's what we're here to do. We're here to win. And they did.
I love it.
To the fullest capacity.
I know. I knew when I asked the question what the answer was. And I know you can't answer it, but man, dude, I love it. I absolutely love it. You reach out through me to reach out to Cody and say thank you. I remember that. I remember that whole conversation after it happened, man.
We spoke on the phone for an hour and I was grateful. You know, he's a hero of mine. Cody Trestrell is, I think he's a, you know,
we're dead, baby.
I just think he's impacted the fire service probably more than anybody. You know, there's a lot of things that we focus on in this job. That's extinguishment, search, and vent. And those are the three main things. Well, he's really killed that search.
I love it whenever talking about anything and he just sends back all caps KILL kill. Mm. I love it, man. It encapsulates so much, even in the four letter word, all caps kill. Mm. Yeah. Cody is a certified badass. 100%.
I love him.
I'm looking forward to firemanship. I'm looking forward to seeing you there, seeing you present this conversation. And so now, man, I have to move to book or books that you think firefighters should be reading. Doesn't have to be a firefighter book. Just what do you think firefighters should read?
So This is probably the first one. Can you see that?
Is that the B-I-B-L-E?
That's it. So Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, if you want to learn how to be a leader, we just need to be more like Jesus. And he's the true A number one leader. And that's really all we need. Those four gospels, if you read
breaking
that.
Breaking out the gospels, yeah.
That's
the number one book that's been suggested through the class and through the scrap. But you're the first one who specifically said the gospels for leadership. So I like that. I like that take.
I've learned a lot recently from that. So this one, I don't know if you've had on the scrap or not. There's so many great that we discussed. So this is what I'm obsessed with. I don't know if you can see this. Can you see that?
I can see it, but I can't read it.
This is a NIOSH report.
Okay.
Okay. There's been 141 line of duty deaths from structure fires, from building fires, since 2004. So 2004 to 2022 is when NIOSH stopped their reports because they're behind a little bit. 141 firemen have died. And NIOSH has the whole document laid out. I am obsessed with these because this is where we learn if this, then this. We learn what the lessons learned. We learn the situation. We learned if, you know, what happened. This is not heart attacks. This is the mm-hmm. They fell through the floor. The roof fell on them. The fire phenomenon. Some kind of traumatic event happened at this fire that made them die. So we need to learn from these. We need to learn from there's 141 of these from just structure fires. And I'm obsessed with them, man. I read 65 of them last Sunday, and I can't stop. Like I'm truly obsessed with learning how firemen died and how we can prevent them from dying under our command.
I have never had the LODD NIOSH reports listed as something that people should read. Phenomenal, phenomenal suggestion, and I love it. Which takes us to the five questions for firefighters. One of my favorite parts of the scrap.
All right.
The part that gets me excited. All of it gets me excited, but I'll say I love it. And say the 5Q3, the five questions for firefighters, version 3.2. There's been quite a few versions of them. You've been here for a lot of them. We're currently at the version 3.2. So the answers are 100% your opinion. The points are arbitrary, assigned by me with the help of the studio audience. The live internet audience. And so my opening question is, are you ready for the next five questions for firefighters?
Let's go.
All right, here we go. Number one, what is the skill that has carried you through your fire service career?
Skill. I would have to probably say resilience is the skill that's carried me through because of the situation that we have at home. And I've encountered a lot of hardship through the job as well, you know, coming up through the ranks a little quicker than, you know, probably what I should have or what it was expected. There are some hardships there. Mm-hmm. But the resilience and work ethic or hard work is really what has pushed me through and kept me going. I love this job. I love going to fires. I love being with my son. When I'm at work, I just, you know, want to be with him. But that resilience has carried me through a lot of difficult times throughout the career.
Love the answer. And I will say this, I know I will never claim to have your resilience and I will never claim to have faced the hardships you face on a routine. And everybody's different. So I'm not elevating or downplaying. But what I'm saying is I love your answer. It's easy max points for me. And when you talk about loving the job and growing into the job, man, I feel like I'm talking to me. I feel like you're telling my story. You know what I'm saying? So that's why easy max points on number one. Number two, coming at you. One of my favorite questions, man. This one was born from a vigilante meetup in Pensacola, Florida. But this one was born from the conversation there about music. It's job town. It's time. You got to imagine the scene from Backdraft where he slaps that tape into the tape deck while they're responding. What song are you playing in route?
Mm, So I'll be honest with you, like, you know, I watch the scrap all the time, right? And I've heard some of these answers. And honestly, like, I listen to the radio on the way to calls. And I do this on purpose because, you know, it's just as well as I do is when you're in the car, when you're in the Tahoe, within you're in the command vehicle, whatever it may be, when you pull up, especially if you're first due, it's a magnet to everything. Everybody wants to run to it. They want to rush to it. And then it just gets chaotic and it gets loud. So almost every call that I go to, I listen to the radio because it helps me. I don't want to go from in the car with everything is quiet and I'm really focused. You know, I'm focused on the radio, but that's the only thing that my ears are hearing. And then get to the job, and then I get out of the car, and then everything is loud, and there's fans going, and there's, you know, saws going, and there's people jumping in your ears. So I actually listen to the radio on the way to calls. Now I'm tuned into what's coming over on the radio traffic, but it's just not that big of a difference once I get on scene. So
right on.
Yeah. So listen, like, for me, you know, it would probably be Eminem, Till I Collapse. That's the one that I work out with, and that gets us pumped up. And when I was a captain down at ones, we would listen to that, and I had to be careful because I had five firemen that could bitch over 300 pounds, and they would listen to that song. We get to the job, and they want to tear the house apart, you know.
So, right.
It'd be that.
We're gonna add it. There is a Spotify playlist, and officially, I don't think Till I Collapse is in there. I think there's a couple other Eminem tracks, but I don't think that one has been added yet. So either way, it will be there now if it's not. So there you go. Thank you for having a song, because we've had a run of no songs added as people gave different various reasons. I don't think any of them got max points, but you absolutely get max points for Till I Collapse. And so we go to number three. What is your favorite fire service tradition?
Yeah, it has to be the kitchen, right? But more specific to especially when I was coming up as a captain, is we had the picnic table outside, and we always had a tradition after dinner. So we had our kitchen table talk just like every fireman does, and thank God that it's not ever recorded. But once dinner was over, we would go outside the bay, and on the front apron, we have a picnic table, and we'd sit there and we could solve everything. We talked shop, we talked personal, and we would do it till 10:30 at night, every single night. And that was a tradition that we had. They still carried on today at that station.
Love it.
And, man, it was my favorite time of the whole day, was just to kind of unwind and debrief from there.
I love it. I love it. Great. Easy max points, especially because, honestly, I'm probably going to make the next five questions for firefighters version 3.3 moving forward, because the firehouse kitchen table, it's far and away.
Yeah. It's hard to beat.
No, it's low hanging fruit. Everybody, you can say it easily. So the new question is probably going to be something like, besides the firehouse kitchen table or the front bumper in the bay, what is your favorite firehouse tradition? I got to take those ones off the table just to try and open it up or come up with a new question. But absolutely, max points. I love the picnic table, the way you tied it in. 100% max points. 3 for 3. Thank you, sir. Number four, on the clock. This is a big one. It's on the clock. Sam is getting the clock ready. Clock didn't load. Okay, Sam said the clock didn't load. He will warn you. Sam will come over and warn you when you have 10 seconds to go. Bottom line is this. You get to your four people you would put on your Mount Rushmore of the fire service. No honorable mentions, no number fives. You get four. It's not a fair question. I know this. And you get 1 minute. So go ahead, Chief Eric Johnson.
So I guess I would pick Vincent Dunn, Chief Vincent Dunn, Chief Mike Turpak, Cody Trestrell. And I had to throw Aaron Fields in there too. And let me tell you why of each of those is each of those have impacted our fire service in a positive way like no one else can. they have made such a huge impact. Chief Vincent Dunn's strategies and tactics books is almost on every promotional exam across this country. It is so good. How I got obsessed with the NIOSH reports, he got obsessed with buildings falling down on people.
Right.
He wrote a massive amount of books about it. But he is a tactician, and that has made our fire safer. That has made us choose decisions and tactics well.
I want to say this right now, because at 1 minute, max points for all four. You did it in like 10 seconds. Now explain. Go ahead. I'm not going to cut you off technically. So go ahead.
Chief Turpak was, I discussed earlier, he is truly if this, then this. He wrote that organizational book, tactic book. If you haven't checked that out, please do it. It's something that will benefit your career, because it truly says, if you have a fire in a church, guess what you're going to do? Well, you're going to throw members to the basement. You're going to have two hose lines, and you're going to protect the sanctuary. Right. It just lays out everything for you. Okay, now Cody Trestrail, we just know how big of an impact he just made for the family of the three that we had in the garden apartment. It was truly because of him. He has just made an impact across the fire service just by what he teaches.
Yes.
And he deserves that credit. And Aaron Fields have done the same with the nozzlemanship. When I was a Good Times fireman, I didn't know how to use a nozzle. I didn't know how to use, hold the nozzle. I didn't know how to do the Camel. I didn't know how to do a hip grip. I didn't know how to hip move. I didn't know how to flow and move. And he has brought and elevated our nozzlemanship across the country. I think he deserves it.
Boom. Again, you already got max points. So I just wanted to hear the reasons why, which takes us 4 for 4 max points. No pressure, but this is the fifth question. It's the question that's been around since the beginning. It is the question: heavy fire, searchable space. John Velez has been talking about it most of the night, but would you rather be assigned to the nozzle or first in on VES?
Well, first of all, I think that you have to take this question off as well, because there's no better answer than Chief Clyde Gordon last night. What a phenomenal answer he is, because that you talking about, I'm talking about you. That was talking about both of us, is we just want to make the job. That's all we want to do. We don't care what we want. Like, I don't think you can answer it any better than that, So
I can't.
He's a great man.
I can't argue, man. One of my favorite people on this planet. But it takes us to your answer to the fifth question.
It's the hose line. Okay. And I would choose the hose line because of this. Okay. I did get to experience the grab, which I'm really fortunate to have that opportunity. And it was hands down the most impactful part of my career. But the nozzle, listen, there's three things that has to happen on the fire ground. We have to have extinguishment, we have to have search, and we have to have ventilation.
Boom.
The hose line can do all three. If we get the right water in the right place at the right time, the company officer goes and takes the window. Once we come a hit, we got a vent. The two other guys on the line search off. Then we just accomplish all three of those main objectives of the fire just by being on the nozzle.
I haven't heard that being on the nozzle accomplishes all three of the primary objectives, but I absolutely love that. And there you go. 5 for 5 max points from Chief John Eric Johnson on the 5 questions for firefighters version 3.2. And with that, and it's not me, brother. You can please go back and look at the chat, because it is max points, max points. Definitely an all-star field. Mount Rushmore max from Dan Bender. Max points, max points. Love it. Yeah, absolutely love it. So there you go. A couple love it's to throw in.
Nice people out there.
Yeah, they're very forgiving. They're forgiving of me. They're forgiving of you. And that's the reason why the scrap does well, because the audience is amazing. Jim Platt said water wins every time. And it's facts, man. Facts. And there we go. Officially makes 233 scraps in the books. If you'd asked me a few years ago if I'd be saying 233, I'd have called you a liar. But we're here, and I'm so proud of it. And Chief, sharing your evening with us, man. Thank you so much for doing so. If someone wants to get a hold of you, how can they go about doing it? Talk to us about your company.
So the best way is to get me on Facebook through John Eric Johnson or ESTI, Emergency Service Training, Inc. So we started a training company on the side, and we wanted to give back to this fire service. The fire service have given us so much over the years. All these mentors, all these people that we've just spoken with, they've gave us so much, you know, and we wanted an opportunity to give back to the fire service. So we started a training company. We're having a fire conference in April 5th, 6th, and 7th, the Come and Take It Fire Conference. It's in Dallas, Texas. Please check us out on Facebook. We want to sell out this crowd. We have 8 amazing instructors from around the country that we've even talked about tonight. It's just going to be phenomenal. We have full hands-on training.
Not to put you on the spot, who all is going to be there?
Okay, so we have Jeremy. We have Rob Backer. Or Jeremy from National Fire Radio. We have Rob Backer that's reading smoke. We have Lieutenant Tim Klett. We have Lieutenant Ray McCormick. We have Lieutenant Dave McGrell. Yeah, it's going to be an all-star. Chief Phillips and Chief Gordon are also coming. Chief Phillips, listen, if anybody wants to be an officer or a chief or who are just likes strategy and tactics, Chief Phillips is teaching a if this then this class, an instant command simulator that he's going to over his 41 years of Houston Fire Department, he's going to get to talk to you one-on-one as students.
And where's it at?
Do it.
Where's it taking place?
Dallas, Texas, April 5th, 6th, and 7th at the Hilton Executive Conference Center. You can get us on Facebook, Emergency Service Training, Inc. Please register. We want to fill up this conference so bad. We're not in it to make any money. We just want to give back to the fire service and give quality training and education out there.
Boom. There you go. Absolutely. Love it. That makes it 232 scraps of the books. If you're not a vigilante, I'm showing off my brand new shiny vigilante hat. Go to firehousevigilance.com. These came in the mail yesterday, actually, while I was on duty, but I'm very proud of it. Go to firehousevigilance.com. Become a vigilante. $5 a month. You can also sign up for a year. Of course, if you are a vigilante, there is the scrap after party. And Chief John Eric Johnson has been gracious enough to say he will come and be a part of, because as everybody knows, the vigilantes get together and roast the guest for how terrible they did, which never takes place, but we always threaten it. I don't know. So it's like a running bad joke. All that being said, we're going to bust your chops. I'm very proud of it. Everybody, if you want to make a change in your life, be a part of the V50. The V50, check it out, man. If you want to conquer yourself, that's the whole point of it. Conquer yourself. The V50, be a part of it. Go check it out, firehousevigilance.com. I'm very passionate about it. If you want to prove to you that you are who you say you are, be a part of the V50. Coming up next week, Chief David Rhodes. Like, I sandwiched Clyde Gordon, Eric Johnson, David Rhodes. Man, it's just killer. 2024 is just killer.
Yeah, that wasn't fair for me.
No, dude, you absolutely crushed it. 2024, there we go. Thank you, Chief Johnson. Thank you for being a phenomenal guest. Thank you for sharing everything with us, your passion, your story, your vision, just everything. Vigilantes, Sam will actually post the link in the private group to get into it. And all that being said, audience, I cannot say this enough. Instagram, not LinkedIn. No one watches on LinkedIn, but I'll say Instagram, YouTube, Facebook. I love you all. Thank you for tuning in each and every week. Thanks
for listening to the Weekly Scrap. Please subscribe and please share. We'll see you at the next episode.